This podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. Through this weekend, buy one, get one at EdenPure.com. Use code word Howie Bogo. One word, Howie Bogo.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith. The last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up, named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. Happy Wednesday. Lots to get to, including the media journalists being heroes. Joe Biden's going door to door to check on your vaccine status. And Trump is suing big tech. There's a lot to cover, and it's all different, but we've got it all for you. The thing I think I want to start with is the suit. The suit that is going to the museum. Before we even get into that, though, there's a piece in Vice. Jared actually gave me this piece yesterday, and I just brushed it off. I was like, I can't stomach this today. But it's amazing. It is truly amazing how these journalists think that they are heroes.
There's a hero if you look inside your heart. You don't have to be afraid of what you are.
And I'm not talking like everyday heroes. I'm talking Mark Wahlberg in a movie saves the plane before it goes down heroes. These people think they stormed the beaches. That is how journalists and Democrats talk about January 6th. And their obsession with January 6th is becoming more and more clear. It's unhealthy. It's very bizarre how not only do people like Joe Scarborough spend day after day after day rehashing this, but now they're memorializing this day. You know, it's such a bad day. I think we all acknowledge that several times. I've said it probably hundreds of times that it was a bad day. But I've never seen people so eager to constantly talk in detail about that day as if it were 9/11. And it's not, by the way. I'm fine. It's okay to have, you know, a variation. It's okay to say, yeah, it was a bad day for America. It wasn't our best look. But 2,000 people didn't die. One person died, and it was one of the rioters, Ashley Babbitt. No cops were killed, despite the fact that Joe Scarborough would tell you that's what happened. And instead now, what we're getting is like this trip down memory lane, day in and day out about this. Now, I'm going to read you some of this Vice article. And we're also going to talk about this suit, Andy Kim's suit. So he was one of the guys who he came out afterwards and started cleaning up. Like, he threw away a water bottle. And I guess the pictures of him in a J. Crew blue suit throwing away trash at the Capitol restored people's faith in America. I'm not exaggerating. I'm going to read you a piece about this. Someone actually spent the time to write this down. And I believe it was in the Washington Post, which makes sense. Because what else is there to write about, you know? Why spend time writing about real things when you can write about a suit that, by the way, is being donated to the Smithsonian? That's where we're at, guys. These people are deranged. So let's start with this Vice article. And by the way, we're having Jerry Callahan on at 12:30 because sometimes when I'm so frustrated with these journalists, I have to have someone on whose anger about it is more intense than mine. You know, so he can kind of take on this angry, frustrated feeling, and I can sit back and just let him, you know, go off. Reporters who survived the Capitol riot are still struggling. This is from Vice. It starts with John Bresnahan. He spent January 6th watching a pro-Trump insurrection ransack the building he's worked in for decades. I'm going to skip around, so for everyone's sake, including my own. He then saw MAGA-clad assailants try to smash open the east doors of the Capitol into the rotunda before officers with M16 rifles screamed at him to clear the area. Keep in mind, M16s. It doesn't say that the rioters had M16s. It's the officers. So right there, we should feel a little bit better about the situation. At one point, he ran downstairs to help an officer back to his feet who'd been knocked down in a scuffle with rioters. He said he only felt personally threatened once during the insurrection, when rioters briefly cut off his exit route. It was unlike anything Bresnahan had seen in nearly three decades on the Hill. But what stunned him the most came hours later, once the rioters dispersed. The House reconvened to certify President Biden's Electoral College victory, and a majority of House Republicans voted against confirming his wins in Arizona and Pennsylvania. Now, listen to this. This is where you get to the root of January 6th. All right. It's not that they were all terrified for their lives. I'm sure some of them were. I'm sure people were scared. But thus far, the people that claimed to be the most scared were people like AOC, who were not even in the building. So maybe I'm skeptical. Maybe that's the reason I'm a little taking everything with a grain of salt after that one. But this is why he's the most shocked. It's not because of, you know, the grandma with the Trump flag over her shoulders stumbling into the rotunda. It's because they decided some House Republicans voted against confirming the wins in Arizona and Pennsylvania. Here's his quote. "That was the thing that surprised me most of the entire day. They'd just gone through this and they were still bleeping objecting. I was shocked at that vote. I was shocked that they did that. I was shocked after everything that had just happened. The next day, I was so angry. So, so angry," he said. So hold on a second. Because a few hundred, I don't even know how many people were at, I know they've managed to arrest a lot of people. I don't know how many people exactly there were. But because of those people, the House Republicans were just supposed to say, never mind. Never mind. We're going to vote to certify because, you know, a guy with the what are those things, Jared? Sheep horns?
Yeah, it's like a Viking helmet.
The guy with the Viking helmet. Well, now we have to vote yes, because the guy with the Viking helmet made us all look bad. That's the entire point of this, and that's what they're using this for. Look at this really bad thing that just happened. Now you have to do exactly what we want, lest we lump you in with this group of crazies. He just gave the game away in this Vice article, which luckily for him, no one's going to read because it's a Vice article. But that's the entire point of all of this, is to shame you into feeling responsible for these nut jobs who stormed the Capitol and then saying any political opinion you have is now null and void because of this. But few have publicly talked about the lasting effects in the months since. I would like to throw a challenge flag, please. I think all of these journalists have talked about this a lot. I'm sure some of them have books coming out. The toll that day took on them, the difficulty some have faced in returning to a site where they experienced trauma, and what it's been like covering a Congress still deeply divided on the events of that day. Small details remain. A shattered plastic guard sits on one of the officers' desks, and a few broken windows haven't been replaced. House members still have to go through metal detectors to vote. And the emotional scars are still there. 6 months after their office was attacked, the Capitol Hill Press Corps is grappling with how to cover the insurrection's fallout. They must say insurrection in this 400 times. As well as its impact on them personally and professionally. Because once again, it's all about them. You know, it's all about the journalists. It's about their story. As Don Lemon once said, I don't often like to make myself the news story. Ha! These people have the egos of like Tom Cruise, every single one of them. Some reporters who were there won't go back into the building. A number have sought therapy to deal with the trauma. One longtime Capitol Hill reporter opted for early retirement shortly after living through the riot. Many still aren't sleeping well. I'm still not sleeping like I used to, even to this day, a PBS NewsHour correspondent said. I became kind of an insomniac. And, of course, all of the reporters interviewed for the story are worried that riots won't be a one-off attack. Yeah, I think they predicted about 16 riots since then, none of which have come to fruition. I did not expect to be this riled up by this. That's the thing. You turn the mic on, you don't know what's going to happen. But I truly am. I am so sick of these people making everything about them. They're obsessed with being heroes.
That riot stopped them from getting Jen Psaki's mom's cookies by 20 minutes, Grace. Show some compassion.
I'm trying. Molly Hemingway put this really well, okay? She said people, and you know how you know this is correct, is that Brian Stelzer was refuting it on Twitter. So immediately, take a page from Molly Hemingway. You can treat this as fact if Brian Stelzer hates it. People who call the few-hour riot at the Capitol by unarmed protesters an insurrection, like this Vice journalist does about 4,000 times, are bad people who are harming the country, particularly if they don't use the term for the months-long violent coordinated attacks on White House, federal courthouses, small businesses, etc. I'm infinitely more terrified of powerful people calling the riot an insurrection and rewriting reality as a ploy to seize unlimited, unaccountable power and brutally oppress their political opponents than I am of Mr. Buffalo Head or Grandma in the Rotunda or Mr. Feet on the Desk. Also, to call it deadly after spending months brazenly lying that protesters killed a cop while downplaying the fact that the only killing was of an unarmed protester by a still anonymous cop is peak propaganda.
Oh no, not reality. Somebody stop him.
Oh, and then they have a quote here from Eric Wasson from Bloomberg News. It definitely could happen again. It's something that's on my radar. We've become very complacent in thinking the U.S. is different. It's eerily back to normal, but sometimes it feels like one of those horror movies, like the end of Jaws. Everything feels copacetic on the beach, but you wonder if there's anything out there. Come on now. It was traumatizing, he said, but he kept reporting. That's always the main point, you know, is that they didn't shy away. They kept reporting. I shut my emotions, Wasson said. If I went down, I was going down fighting. I'm going to do my job.
You know, Michael Myers.
We need some Jaws music, I think, for this. He was back the next day, pressing House Speaker Nancy Pelosi at her first press conference for answers about how security could have failed so badly and whether she would fire the officers in charge. I do remember just feeling unsafe in my house. It occurred to me, like, I wonder if some protesters could be tracking me or could show up at my house. There was definitely a moment of fear and just trying to assess whether there was actually any danger to me and my family. These people are deranged. I'm speechless. And you know what? This is absolutely what Molly Hemingway said is and what this guy says in the Vice article. That's the game here. Is they want to weaponize and seize and pounce on this one bad event for the rest of time. And anytime you have a different opinion, they turn back to that. I remember this because I was getting messages from people who don't like my politics and they were using the Capitol riot as a way to say, see, you should apologize. You've been wrong this whole time. I wasn't there. I'm not grandma with the Trump flag on me. And neither are you. And neither are most people. But they want to use it as a way that none of us can have opinions anymore. And you have to vote to certify their elections. And you have to do what they say. And you have to listen to critical race theory. Otherwise, you're a racist boomer rube who attacked the Capitol and tried to overthrow our democracy. It's such BS. All right. I don't think Jerry can get more mad than I am today. So good luck to him. That's going to be a tough competition. We'll be right back with your calls. 844-500-4242. Next up, Representative Andy Kim's suit in the Capitol cleanup photo was from a J. Crew sale. It now belongs to the Smithsonian. Get out your puke buckets. This stuff gets worse and worse by the day. This is The Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. Grace Curley. She's working for you.
I'm like Bette Midler in For the Boys. Gotta keep the troops entertained.
Scary. It's scary. It's a 6 months, too. You can almost feel it. And I'm not... I just want to clarify. I'm not making light of what happened. It was bad. I get it. But what is this creepy obsession with, like, saving the articles of clothing people were wearing and you know, going and finding all of these people who, like, put their feet up on a desk and finding out they had a Lego set of the Capitol maid? Ah! It's a little overdone. And by the way, Glenn Greenwald, who is a great follow on Twitter, he has this whole thread about this. But my favorite part, he mentions this Vice article. He says, there's another crucial dynamic here. We saw it with that Vice article on how liberal journalists need to think they at an insurrection and are traumatized. They aren't threats to anyone. They spout liberal pieties and serve officials. So they hate those who actually dissent. That's why they mock, you know, parents who speak up against critical race theory. That's why they mock Tucker Carlson talking about the NSA. They mock these people because they know these people are far more brave than they will ever be. And I just want to point out another text I just received here. This is from this... Oh, I can't find it now. Hold on. Someone just wrote in that crossing the street in New York City is more dangerous than January 6th ever was. Let's go to the calls here. Lou, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Lou.
Yeah, how you doing, Grace? You know, I wonder if these reporters were shocked to see our cities burning all through the last year or so. You know, while they were there reporting, while they were shooting, they were throwing things at police, streets were burning and all that stuff. Where were they then? And it's a shame that, you know, they're making it sound like they were at Lexington and Concord, for crying out loud, or Bunker Hill.
No, I know. It's so frustrating because they really think they're heroes. And then you look at someone like David Dorn, who was killed during one of these peaceful protests, and nobody said boo. None of these journalists cared. They only care when they think that they can be, you know, the lead actor in this action movie that they've made up in their minds. Bob, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Bob.
Hey, Grace. Hey, he kind of stole my thunder, the last caller, but I just want to say this. Do they have room in the Smithsonian for those deeds to those businesses of the millions of people that were attacked over last summer with those protests? That was an insurrection.
Well, the craziest part, Bob, is that you actually feel like you're in the Truman Show or in 1984, where they just look at you and say, I was reading the responses to Molly Hemingway's tweet about how if you're going to call this an insurrection, you should call what happened over the Summer of Love insurrection. And people were replying, what do you mean? What happened over the summer? It's like people really do get all their news from CNN and MSNBC. And it's incredibly frightening to see it happening in real life, that people just don't understand what's happening around them. We're going to talk to Jerry Callahan next. We'll take calls throughout the show, but Jerry's going to be talking about Representative Andy Kim's blue suit is being stored in the Smithsonian. He is so brave. So, so brave. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. It's the Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
What would happen if after 9/11 we had done nothing? We had done nothing. Right. Think about that. We had done nothing after 9/11. And to me, though there was less loss of life on January 6th, January 6th was worse than 9/11 because it's continued to rip our country apart and give permission for people to pursue autocratic means. And so I
don't know. I think that was Matthew Dowd. I don't know how you can say that with a straight face when you know how many people had, you know, family members killed in 9/11, you know, kids lost parents, how you can say that. And I just want to be clear about the insurrection. I knew they were going to do this. I knew the day it happened, I had a pit in my stomach for several reasons. But one, because I was like, ugh, these idiots who are storming the Capitol just gave all of these Democrats the exact storyline they want. And I knew they would milk it. You don't let a crisis go to waste. But good Lord, I did not know it would be this painfully obvious that they're just sucking the life out of this thing for everything it's worth. Joining me now is the one and only Jerry Callahan. Jerry, thank you so much for coming on The Grace Curley Show.
Hi, Grace. How are you?
I'm a little frustrated today because I started off trying to ignore this Vice article. It came out yesterday, and I was like, you know, it's a six-month anniversary of January 6th. It's all the Democrats can talk about. But then I see this piece, Jerry, which I know you've been focused on too, about Representative Andy Kim's suit. Can you kind of give my listeners, because I don't think people are going to believe this, a little synopsis?
I'm telling you, I read the story you tweeted out, the Philadelphia Inquirer story, and it's amazing. I mean, this is a guy, and I felt like I had to read it, you know, Grace, because you see the headline, you say, that can't be right. It's to be a congressman who was scared and you know, soiled his pants, and now he's sending the suit to the Smithsonian to put next to the Wright brothers' plane or next to Archie Bunker's chair as some significant part of American history. That's all it is. That is all it is. It's a congressman, an unknown backbencher, who wore this kind of bright blue suit, and then he helped clean up while wearing the suit. And he sent it to the Smithsonian, but the best part is he said he felt like he had to do that because a lot of people told him they were inspired by that suit, by seeing him wear it in the Capitol.
It's absolutely insane. And it's not even a remarkable suit. It's kind of like bright blue, I guess, but it's just a J. Crew suit. And he was cleaning up trash. And I like that you said they soiled their pants, because I was just in the green room talking to some of the guys I work with. And I said, you know, first of all, I don't believe that any of these people were that scared. But let's say they were. Don't you just kind of keep that to yourself? As grown men, do you walk around talking about how petrified you were, and how, even though no one got hurt except for Ashley Babbitt, who was killed, how you can't sleep at night? I mean, it seems like it's a little much, Jerry.
It's remarkable. And I think this is, I often talk about how Democrats and liberals in general get accustomed to being, to not being called out on anything, to not being questioned on anything. Whatever they say, you know, Joe Biden could sit there and say, you know, Georgia's voting laws, it's Jim Crow, or he could say that a cop was killed on January 6th, and he's used to, you know, the slobbering sycophants around him in the media not calling him out, protecting him. Just the opposite, protecting him, you know, standing guard for him. That's like this. They feel like they can say anything and their supporters will believe it, will buy it. I mean, not only did this clown Andy Kim, who, by the way, I used to like when he sang Rock Me Gently. Have you heard the song Rock Me Gently? You should play it.
We'll play it in the next break.
But think of this, Matthew Dowd from MSNBC, this absolute joke of a journalist. He went on TV, I believe yesterday, and said that January 6th was definitively worse than 9/11. Now, I just looked it up, and it was the death toll on 9/11 was 2,977 innocent people. On January 6th, it was one, Ashley Babbitt. On 9/11, there were billions and billions of dollars worth of damage. In fact, it started a war that lasted 20 years. That's what happened on 9/11. On January 6th, a bunch of 450 clowns, morons, stormed the Capitol. Some were violent, some weren't. They cleaned up the mess in about 3 days, put everyone in jail, and we moved on. We essentially moved on. There was this idea, Grace, when they say they almost overthrew our democracy. I always ask, you know, how would that have worked exactly? They would have killed all the congresspeople, like beheaded Mike Pence, and then made Viking Man our new God King. Would he be the president? Would he be our dictator? How would that have worked if they overthrew democracy? A bunch of unemployed, angry MAGA morons. What would they have done if they overthrew our democracy. It's just absurd, but they're so used to saying whatever they want and no one calling them out. That's what they do here. And they just keep doubling down. It gets sillier every day.
It really does. And I think today, you know, I ignore, you know, I used to watch some of Morning Joe, like on my Twitter feed, and I would pull it for the show. And then I reached this point where I was like, I can't do this anymore. They say the same thing every single day. But I guess it's the 6-month anniversary is why they're all, you know, singing the blues and playing their tiny violins. Jerry, I do want to ask you about something else, though. So Joe Biden, first Jen Psaki came out yesterday and she said, we're going to go door to door and ask, you know, if people have gotten the vaccine. And immediately, you know, a lot of people in the press were thinking that has to be a mistake. There's no way she actually meant that. But then Joe Biden came out, you know, a few hours later and doubled down and said door to door again. What do you think of this idea of going door to door like Jehovah's Witnesses and asking people their vaccination status?
Jehovah's Witnesses with needles and syringes. It is frightening. And the thing that disappoints me, Grace, is the number of people who don't find it alarming, who don't find it scary, that a president would say, we're going to go door to door and make you get this vaccine. I mean, there are people who don't want to get it for perfectly reasonable reasons. I mean, young and thin and fit and people who had COVID. There's no reason for them to get it. I mean, get the vaccine. It's just absurd. So someone's going to knock on their door and say, okay, which arm? This won't hurt much. I mean, it's crazy, but that's how Biden feels right now. He feels like he's in control of everything and he could do whatever he wants. He's got, you know, he's got the media, he's got big tech, he's got academia. He's got everybody on his side. It feels like he can do whatever he feels like. It's to me, I mean, while you're there, why don't they check and see if we have, you know, any unregistered guns and check and make sure our thermostats are at 66. And I mean, they're going to go door to door. They could do a lot of things that Joe Biden would like to get done.
Yeah. And the only thing you can't do when you go door to door is if you're asking, you know, the census question, are you illegal?
Right.
Are you a legal citizen? Then you're in big trouble. But I think what you're...
That'd be like a dictator. That'd be authoritarian.
Yes, that would be so Trumpian and terrible. We'd hate it. But I think what you're talking about is something I've been noticing, too, which is, and I have people call in about this. It's been happening a long time where, you know, the Democrats play the long game, whether it's critical race theory and all these things. You know, they bring in this wokeness slowly over time. They kind of boil the frog. But Jerry, I think if there's anything positive about this pandemic, which I hate even saying, like the silver lining, but it does feel like the pendulum kind of has to swing soon, because whether they're door to door with the vaccine or they're telling you to wear a mask outside or whatever it is, it feels like people are starting to wake up and go, this is not the country I grew up in. And you've been in this longer than me, Jerry, not to make you feel old, but do you feel that way too? Like we've got to reach a peak at some point where this turns around?
Well, I think it's worse than ever. And I said this to a friend of mine the other day when they were talking about the military gone totally woke. And you've read the stories, you know, them flying the pride flag and, you know, teaching critical race theory and that fool Milley up there, you know, before Congress saying, you know, what's wrong with reading Ibram Kendi, forcing, you know, guys to read it at West Point. And I said, what the hell? That was that in the last 6 months, they've gotten the military. And it used to be the military was the last, you know, bastion of meritocracy. It was the one place that they didn't, the wokesters didn't infiltrate. Well, they got the military and they got, you know, Raytheon. Now, I'm sure you saw that story. Raytheon is now fully invested in critical race theory and all this other nonsense. And I wonder what we have left, Grace. I mean, they got big tech, they got media, they got academia, they got Hollywood, they got obviously the House, the Senate, and the White House. I think a lot hinges on 2022 because it will feel, then you'll feel the pendulum swing back if we get the House back. And obviously Biden's a lame duck, whether you know, Kamala can win in 2024 or not is another question, but that's the only chance. I mean, we're not getting big tech back or media back unless we get the House. Unless the House swings, no one on Capitol Hill is going to do anything about big tech tyranny, and that to me is the most frightening thing of all. Like, Trump's railing about it right now, as he should be, and threatening or suing, as he should be, because I'm not sure what you do about that, Grace. They're not, we're not flipping you know, Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey. They're not coming over to our side anytime soon.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm speaking with Jerry Callahan. You guys can follow him at Jerry Callahan and make sure you check out his podcast. It's awesome. Jerry, I'm glad you brought that up. So Trump's suing Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg and Twitter's Jack Dorsey. I think this is another question that you could answer really well, which is free speech does seem to always be the one way we can combat this stuff. And that seems to be becoming increasingly more hard. And also, it just seems like with a lot of these arguments, whether it's like you were talking about critical race theory or this insurrection, it's a lot of semantics. And it's hard to argue with people when you can't agree on a reality or you can't decide what something is. I feel right now like free speech is one of the biggest issues out there because they're going to use the line, well, it's a private company. They can do what they want. They can do what they want. But at a certain point, these companies have so much power. And if they can silence the president of the United States, they can silence Jerry Callahan.
Oh, no question. And I find that the scariest thing. I'm with the Grace when I see whoever, you know, like they said, they started with Alex Jones and everyone, it's Alex Jones. And then they went to, you know, Milo, and they went, you know, down the line, Laura Loomer, and then sooner or later, it's the president. It's, you know, the president as well as, you know, his press secretary, people all around him getting canceled and deplatformed. And you're thinking, wow, this is scary. And I used to be one of those people that said, you know, it's private sector. They could do what they want. But the more you read about the carve-outs and the exceptions that big tech gets, the more it feels like it's hopelessly intertwined with the government. I mean, they're using the power of the government to allow Facebook and Google this unthinkable power they have to just silence anybody, suppress anybody they want. I mean, I think it dawned on me when I believe it was Laura Loomer, but there's been other candidates ran for office, ran for Congress, and couldn't email. They were banned by whatever, Gmail. They couldn't email people, and they're running, you know, I believe she was in the, she won the primary, was in the general election, and forget Twitter, Facebook, she couldn't email potential constituents. She couldn't run a campaign because they banned her from emailing, and I said, that is freaking frightening.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point because, I mean, they're always talking about how broadband and the internet, how it's infrastructure. So if it's infrastructure, then it's vital to everyone, not just, you know, Democrats who want to use it for their campaigning. But another thing you just brought up, which I always think about when they talk about, well, it's a private company, they can do what they want, you know, and I used to think that as well. But then you start hearing when there's a hack and Biden says, well, it's a private company, you know, they can figure out whether or not they're going to pay the ransom. And I always think, well, how come the private companies couldn't decide to stay open during the pandemic or, you know, maybe have more than six people at a table? How come the private companies get taxed they get taxed a lot? Sometimes the private company thing works for Democrats and sometimes it doesn't.
Right. And that's a great point. We found out during the pandemic, we found out a lot. You know, we found out who was on our side and who wasn't. And I would put, the enemy of the people, number one on the list in where we live would be Charlie Baker, who we thought was a Republican, turned out to be a big government tyrant, petty tyrant, just like Whitmer and Cuomo and Murphy and the rest of them. I mean, how any Republican could ever vote for Baker again is beyond me. But you found out that they not only had power we didn't think was possible, or didn't think existed, but they couldn't wait to use it. I mean, they just couldn't wait to shut down businesses, close schools, issue curfews. And when you look back, you say, what the hell did we need a curfew for? Like, what did that do? I mean, what did, shutting down a road race or a parade? There were so many things they did. And you say, or kids' sports, forcing little children to wear masks outdoors. There's so many things. And you say, it should at least make sense. If they're going to make these kinds of moves and implement these kind of measures, it should at least make some sense. And a lot of it didn't. And it was just done because they could do it. And you never felt like that was, you know, going to happen in America. And it did, and it just kept happening. And I think it's still happening. I think we're going to see people, a lot of these people it's going to be tough to wrest control away from these governors and all these petty tyrants who have made these rules and enjoyed them for the last year and a half.
Yeah, I totally agree. Jerry Callahan, host of the Jerry Callahan podcast, which everyone can find wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get them, he's on there. And make sure you follow him at Jerry Callahan on Twitter while he's still there. Until, you know, Jack Dorsey decides, I'm not too crazy about this guy. Jerry, thanks for coming on the show.
That's happening one of these days. I just always wake up and say one of these days I'm going to be gone because I feel like I'm, you know, anytime I tweet, I feel like I got to be breaking some of their unwritten rules, you know.
Well, soak it in, guys. Soak it in while he's there. Jerry, thanks for coming on the show. Due to the incredible response, Eden Pure is continuing the Thunderstorm BOGO offer for one more week. I tell you guys all the time, Eden Pure Thunderstorm is great because you turn it on, it gets rid of all the smells. You know, if you cook something in your kitchen, boom, you turn that thing on, 5 minutes, it's like you never cooked anything there, which, you know, is awesome because you don't want to come in 10 minutes after you cook steak. Smells good within the first minute, 10 minutes, not so crazy about it. Jared loves it for his allergies.
Yes, absolutely. It's been great because it actually creates a super oxygen, which gets rid of all the pollens, the pollutants, dust, allergens, viruses, things like that in the air, but especially the pollen. For me, it's been great to breathe clean air with my Eden Pure Thunderstorm.
And right now, Eden Pure is offering a BOGO to my listeners. That's right. Buy one, get one free. Pet kitchen tobacco and basement smells are gone in no time with the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. Here's how you get it. I get a lot of questions about this on Facebook. People message me. You want to go to EdenPureDeals.com and put in code word Grace BOGO. That's EdenPureDeals.com, code word Grace BOGO. Hurry, these will sell out quickly. Don't delay. By the way, bonus, shipping is free. I know that's attractive to a lot of people, including myself. We'll be back with more of your calls, 844-500-4242. We're going to talk a little bit about this door-to-door idea by Jen Psaki. Do you want Jen and Joe knocking on your door? And maybe Dr. Jill would come too. A little, you know, band of three, and they would say, hi, what's your vaccination status? We'll be right back. It's the Grace Curley Show.
She's never held office, but she paid the Whiskey Priest's monthly rent once. She's Grace Curley. She's got the voice of an angel.
I've been called the songbird of my generation, of people who've heard me.
It's Grace Curley.
Rub me gently, rub me slowly.
Today's poll question is brought to you by Exit Realty. With over 25 locations in New England, they have you covered. To learn more about their innovative technology that gets your house sold, go to exitrealty.com/New England. Jared, what is the poll question? What are the results thus far?
All right, well, we talked about in the last segment with Jerry, Andy Kim's blue suit is going to the Smithsonian. So the question is, which clothing exhibit would you visit at the Smithsonian? Andy Kim's blue suit, AOC's white pantsuit, Nancy Pelosi's kente scarf, Joe Biden's aviators, Kamala's Converse All-Stars, or Dr. Jill's scrunchie?
I have a scrunchie on right now, by the way, in honor of this poll question.
Let's call the Smithsonian.
I'm going to say Nancy Pelosi's scarf because that meme, there's still so many memes about that. That lived in history for sure.
Yes, Nancy Pelosi's kente scarf is polling at 25% for the lead, 22% for Joe Biden's aviators, and in third place, Andy Kim's blue suit.
Adam, you've been on the line a while. We don't have a lot of time, Adam, but go ahead.
Just very quickly, Grace, I love the show. I'd like to get your opinion. I think it's all about the Benjamins. I think all these politicians, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, they just keep raising money to get reelected. And who gives the money? It's big tech and all these other people. And that's what's corrupting the whole system. And I think the corruption is only going to change with a revolution.
I think it's definitely everything comes back to money for sure, especially when you're talking about Mark Zuckerberg. We'll be right back with Libby Emmons from the Post Millennial. We're talking critical race theory and the indoctrination of the youth. This is the Grace Curley Show.